with episode 770 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Gary from Jacksonville.
That's right. That's who we have.
Yeah, pretty much. That's it for this week, guys.
So, you know, we have been alluding to the fact in recent episodes that are spooling out on the podcast feed that we are looking at some... format changes, some changes in overall what we do here on the show and some of the things that we focus on. And certainly, I think in the next episode or two, which I think is what we'll have for this week, you're going to see that we are changing things up a little bit. We're starting with baby steps right now, but as we go forward, it's going to be maybe some more substantial things. So really focusing in on some of the things that we're excited to talk about, things that are important to us. And really getting a little bit more conversational, hopefully. I think that one of the things that I mentioned before is that I was hoping to do things a little bit closer to some of our friends' podcasts on the VOG network. Certainly, Orange Lounge Radio has certain format things that they do at the beginning of their show, as does Anime Jam Session. And one of those things is that they talk about basically what they've been up to for the last couple of weeks, usually relative to what the actual show is about. So we'll get into some deeper discussion about TV and so forth later on. We're bringing some of that open topic stuff a little bit up forward in the show. So, Gary, what have you been up to the last couple of weeks?
Oh, geez. Let's see. When's the last time I touched base with everyone here? I guess it was actually before the holidays. I took the family skiing, and we also went out as a family to see the La La Land movie, which was, I think, deserving of most of the praise that I've been hearing it get critically. It's quite a fun show. It's sort of a modern Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers picture, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about it. So this is more like a musical type of a film?
I won't call it a full musical because while I think they could have went there, maybe another handful of songs and it would have been there, they did pedal back on it a little bit. And there is we didn't put out a spoiler message yet, given it's still rolling out a little bit. It's just a very sort of bittersweet type of movie that is a lot of fun. And I did buy the soundtrack and we've been listening to it incessantly. We finally found something to replace the Hamilton soundtrack in the household. And so we're having a lot of fun with it. And we hum the songs and everything like that. So, yeah, it's really caught on, at least in my household. So that's been a lot of fun. I'm trying to think, anything else? Nothing crazy. We're just starting to gear up, I guess, for the shows to pick up. So we've been watching. We've reviewed it before, but we went through and watched a whole bunch of the Dark Mirror shows that was airing on Netflix, and it's like a modern Twilight Zone, for at least that's how I spit it off, and that's been a lot of fun and slightly disturbing at times. So
I hear that it is a bit darker and maybe also just a little too close to home sometimes.
Yeah, it really is a modern Twilight Zone in some of the ways that some of the recaps of the actual show itself, as they've tried to spin out the new Twilight Zone or things like that, it sort of seemed like they were still in the old 60s mold, which isn't a horrible thing, but at the same time, you know, I really get the sense that this, you know, Black Mirror is what Serling would have done if he did it today.
Oh, yeah. I've heard a lot of people recommend it. I just haven't gotten around to watching it quite yet, which just is a testimony to how much is out there. Let's see, for us, certainly, to be honest, I've been playing a lot of games lately with the family, and
what's the popular one with the family?
Actually, FIFA 17 has been very popular, so I've been trying to learn how to play that and not being entirely successful, but
well, you don't use the hands.
True.
But those controllers using your toes, I don't know how people do it, but
I don't do very well that way. Apparently I get looked at very funny. There's that. I have been trying to play Final Fantasy 15, but I just haven't really had the opportunity to do so. I'm still in the second chapter, I think, and really picking away a little bit here and there. I did wind up finishing Pokemon Sun. That one's a little bit easier to do because it's on a handheld, so, you know, when we're watching something or whatever else, I can go ahead and play that, and that seems to work out pretty well. I managed to log in quite a few hours on that game over the course of a month, so that was very enjoyable. Certainly, I haven't necessarily taken to Pokemon games in the past, but this one I actually managed to really kind of get into, so that was a pleasant surprise. This just recently went out to go see that movie Hidden Figures.
We almost saw it this weekend. It didn't work out for our scheduling. But I've been hearing really great things about that. I heard one of my friends said, you know, if you have a daughter that's interested in any career, that she should go see it. So
yeah, I mean there is entirely that side of things. I think that from purely, you know, if you want a movie that is a great recruiter for, you know, so-called STEM type of jobs and opportunities and careers for, you know, girls and so forth, this is a really good movie to go and see, because especially just the interest in the space race and so forth. And beyond that, just, yeah, being very inspiring to say, here are some women who did some amazing things. And I think just from a historical context, it really is very interesting to see how much things have changed, and maybe how much things haven't changed as much as we would have liked.
So they are kind of honest about things, because, you know, sometimes when you when they do a period piece, so to speak, it almost seems like they glamorize certain things, or, you know, sort of hone in on one negative aspect. But you felt it was well rounded, or
it was pretty well rounded. Yeah, you could definitely see where they. I would say that they probably could have gotten even deeper into that, but I think they went just far enough to make it very clear that what the challenges were. They speak, you know, in the general context of 1961, 1962. Certainly, they get into the fact that Virginia at the time was a segregated state. They get into just the personal challenges, but they also just casually drop in certain societal things as well. So, and there's a few characters that I would say, instead of being super blatant about it, they at least are showing how some people can be very casually and unknowingly racist, to say the least.
Okay. It was very prevalent. So.
Oh yeah, definitely, and it's part and parcel of the movie. They don't really shy away from it. So that was good. I mean, they did take a few little historical licenses, as they often must for the sake of drama. But all of the, you know, the vast majority of events, I should say, are well documented. It's a known historical point. And I thought that they did a really nice job of fleshing that out and making you really sympathize with the characters. And certainly, I mean, just... I know that you're a fan of the early space race and so forth, and the space program in general, and that definitely is kind of a central theme because of where they work. And it's interesting to see it from a certain different perspective, because, you know, we watch it from, you know, things like From the Earth to the Moon, and some similar time frames are covered in this film, and it's just a side of that story we don't normally get to see. And may not have even been covered in some of those other productions. And I know at least one person that I was talking to was like, well, why was it never mentioned before? And all this kind of stuff. And it was like, well, watch the story. You'll figure it out pretty fast. So definitely a great film. You know, it was great to see it in a very diverse audience as well. So got to get a lot, you know, the feel of all these different people reacting to what was going on screen. And definitely a movie that, as you said, young girls or teenage girls who are thinking about going into the sciences and into really any of these technical careers, this is a real booster to their confidence to say, hey, you know, I can't be discouraged by the fact that it may seem like a boys' club a lot of the time. So, yeah, definitely recommended. Go out and see it, guys. Now, Gary, as we're going along here with things that we've been up to, it occurs to me that for various reasons, we really didn't get to hear your thoughts on Rogue One.
Yes, unfortunately, there was a bit of a household accident, and I had to rush to the emergency room during our recording, unfortunately. So, I did miss it. Let me say, I liked it, as opposed to what do you want to call it, Star Wars 7? I felt that this was really an original take on the source material. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I liked the nonstop action that was going on throughout the whole movie. I enjoyed seeing all the new characters, and I thought some of the homages they did, like with Mon Mothma and Bail Organa, were very nicely done, well done. They fit perfectly without being one of those spotlight cameos. Hey, look who we have here. You know, I thought it it felt right. Almost just about everything did. I was very sad that everyone died at the end, at least anyone of importance. I felt that that was a loss moving a loss that we didn't have to have. While I understand it, the need for sacrifice to literally wipe the slate clean seemed what's the word I'm looking for? Unnecessary. I easily thought someone could have survived and, oh gosh, why have we never heard about them? And we didn't need to do that. The Rebellion, you know, is a large group of people. It's not just the, you know, maybe 60 to 75 people that we have seen on screen in Yavin 5. It's a lot more. So the idea that, you know, there couldn't be more rebels that we don't know about, you know, I would have been fine with that. And I do have to say, the part of the movie that blew me away the most was how they managed to link it up with A New Hope. Mm-hmm. It was so effortless and fit so perfectly well. And it was so good that it made the beginning of 4 even better. And I can't imagine a better way to say that, you know, to give a compliment than having this kernel of the story at the end of Rogue One enhance something from what, like 40 years ago. It blew me away that it was that tight, that well done. Now, I mean, you have your ending point, so I understand you can definitely write to it, but it fits so well. And as as every geek that I know of went back and watched at least the beginning of A New Hope as soon as they had the opportunity after getting back from Rogue One, and you just appreciate it so the original movie so much more as a result of Rogue One. And that, you know, to be able to write it and have it mesh and work so well is really a testament to the writers and the director's abilities. I was stunned by that. I mean, I knew it would end up somewhere near there, obviously, with the rough description given as the movie was coming out. But to work so well and be literally within, as my best guess would go, a few days at best between the two movies was just phenomenal. So that was the part that above and beyond blew me away. So it was really good. Even I'm never quite good with names in these descriptions, but the Death Star designer, his sort of shadow traitor storyline, I guess you'd say it was also very very compelling, and I thought that was such a nice little gem to throw into this story where the story didn't need it, but having it in there made everything seem much more noble and purposeful.
Yeah. So, what would you say was kind of like your negative for the movie? You know, anything in particular that you felt other than the fact that they did kill everybody off, which was kind of an interesting note considering the fact that that was part of the reshoots, was to go back and make sure they all died. So,
was it? Oh.
Yeah. Geez. Well, the interesting story, and I've heard it a couple different ways now, including someone who was involved with the actual scripting for the film, was that initially, when they were writing the film, they thought to themselves, oh, you know, we probably aren't going to be allowed to kill off everybody in the story because it's a Disney film, right? Disney owns Star Wars, so
yes.
We're going to have some people survive. And so the initial cut had some of them get away. And actually, it was Disney execs. I think it was actually Kathleen Kennedy, I think her name is.
Yes, she's the now de facto Lucasfilm head, yes. Well, right. Not de facto, she is the Lucasfilm head.
Right. So from what I understand, she was the main proponent to kind of go back and say, you know what, we've seen the first cut of this movie, we see where it's at, but don't you think they should all die? And they're like, wait, you'll let us do that? And they're like, yeah, it actually makes sense. It fits the story. It would be the thing to do. So they said, okay, great. And they're like, good, how much do you need to go and redo this? So, Disney had a lot of faith in not only the film itself and the whole idea of this, but actually put a little bit more investment in it just to make sure that it went where they felt it should. So I always thought that was an interesting anecdote, just the fact that it's like, oh, yeah, we can't make it that dark. It's Disney. And then Disney turns around and says, no, go ahead.
Well, there were a few nice things. My daughter actually caught Alan Tudyk's voice on the robot, mm-hmm. and they're like, they killed him again, Dad. Yes. I said, through the chest, no less. I said, I don't know. Maybe it's just the he's typecast.
I'm fairly sure that was intentional to do that to him. But
yeah, that was good. And then I know there's been a lot of talk about the whole Tarkin digital thing, and while it did look somewhat, I mean, it was still a little off. I felt you could tell something wasn't quite right about it. Not that it was poorly done, but it still was not live action, and it was noticeable. However, I liked it. I thought it fit well. He was a person of importance with the station, and as we knew going forward in A New Hope, he obviously swung a lot of weight. So I think the character needed to be in there. Now, I don't know if the digital character needed to be in there. In older days, the role would have been recast, and the person might have had some resemblance or something, but there never would have been the actual necessarily passing him off as that person. Concern's too strong a term, but I guess, in this modern age, can we have that same actor forever? And yeah. I don't know that that's a good thing. I think as I think back to some of the shows that we have done where there have been slight swaps, most notably Spartacus, as I look back several years, and, they just sort of move forward with it without really making any note of the actor's change. And I don't know that that's a bad thing, but I've heard a lot of criticisms about about this whole digital, facelift or this overlaying of an original actor's face onto someone else's body and stuff like that. And I'm not sure where I am on that. I'm still working my way through it, honestly. I know some people feel it's an insult, even if his family doesn't oppose it. But and other people say, it needed to be done because it wouldn't have worked otherwise. And I'm not sure where I feel with that, John. Do you have any feelings on it? Because it's just so, in some ways, it's so new that I really haven't fleshed everything out yet for myself.
It's definitely different when you have the actor that has passed, right? Because we've seen things in movies like, say, Tron Legacy, which was not a particularly good example of it, where they tried to, de-age a character, and then they've done a really good job on it, say, like in Ant-Man with Michael Douglas, or even better with Robert Downey Jr. in Civil War. I mean, those were some astounding examples. And then on Westworld, even, you had Anthony Hopkins, when they showed the earlier days when they de-aged him on there, and it looked practically seamless. Mm. So you've had some really good examples of them doing this sort of digital facelift type stuff with the actual actors and with people who are living. So they at least have the consent or the ability to do the consent, right? But now you have an actor that has not been around for a long time. And I thought at most, initially, when I was watching the movie, that it was going to be a cameo. That, they'd show him from behind, they'd use the voice. I was like, okay, I get it. They're going to do that and then sparingly use him. Then to have him actually turn around, have the digital effect there, and have him be a major part of the story was shocking.
I
don't know that it was necessarily bad, but I did think to myself, like you said, you could tell it was CGI, and certainly we could because we know that the actor's not doesn't look like he did back then, certainly, and it has passed, but I initially thought, oh, are they going to use a stand-in? And then, of course, it was, but it wasn't. I thought,
because when they showed him in like Revenge of the Sith, for example, where they showed a younger Tarkin, and he basically sort of walked up, nodded his head, but he really didn't have any extensive dialogue or interaction, for that matter.
Right.
And so I was expecting sort of the same thing, but when he had, I guess I'll say, a reasonable amount of dialogue, that was a surprise to have him so interactive.
Now, what's interesting is that I did talk to some people who didn't know that it wasn't an actor, and they felt like it was shocking to them to learn that it was a digital reconstruction. They couldn't really tell very well. And I'm talking about people that I went to go see the movie with in 3D IMAX. So it's like, I don't know if you just weren't paying attention or if it was just you didn't know to look because you didn't know this guy was not an actor, but yeah, there were some people who were able to be fooled by the whole thing. So I guess that worked in a certain sense. What didn't work for me was nearly as well was actually the cameo at the end of the film. And I felt that looked far more fake. When she turned around, it was okay. When she spoke, her face just did not move the way that I would have expected. It just looked off, way off. So I don't know what the deal was there, if that was a late addition. When Edmund and I spoke about it last time we recorded, I was speculating that at least originally it was just her turning around, and then they quickly tried to add it in later, and maybe didn't have the same amount of have the same people necessarily doing it, because it just did not look anything as good as the Tarkin stuff did to me.
It did stand out, like her face was too, I don't know, bleached or maybe too good looking almost. It was.
I think it was jarring because, again, I think that there were a couple times when the dialogue for Tarkin didn't quite match his movements, but it wasn't really egregious. And there, with Leia at the end, it was just no. It just does not work. It doesn't. Her face doesn't look like it's moving correctly. But for me, yeah, I really enjoyed how much it meshed, like you said. That was a big thing for me, and I feel like it's a good template for the new Star Wars stories, so to speak.
Mm.
All right, well, that was all good start to the week, but we do have some news stories here that we do want to get into, and I know this first one, Gary, is a continuation of a long saga for you, and I'm just curious about your take on this, because this seems like a big blow to the whole Star Trek Axanar.
Yeah, it is, and it continues to wind through, tedious lawsuit antics, I guess, for lack of a better term. Basically, what a few different things actually have happened as a result of this. First off, the lawsuit is going to actually go to a jury trial to be decided. It won't be summarily ruled by a judge. However, the judge did make some opinions, which don't necessarily bind the jury in any way. So that was something that was sort of played down a little bit. But at the same time, he had a few different things. He felt that it did have a commercial. It really was a commercial venture because it did generate profits of some sort. And I'm not trying to get into the argument of the definition of profits or anything like that, because different people consider different things to be actual pure profit versus what's needed to make something happen. So, for example, even the Red Cross pays their staff, but they're considered a nonprofit. However, not trying to necessarily equate the two, just to go through the concept. They also felt that Axanar did go above and beyond fair use. That with all the arguments over warp drive and Klingon language and other issues, they felt that there was the judge at least felt that there was a substantial similarity. But he's, again, these are just opinions and they don't actually hold legal weight. They're sort of just points of clarification to inform the jury, since they didn't listen to the first, 100 plus hours of different testimony and other things along that nature yet. I don't know. There's still an argument that he's trying to consider it almost like satire, and I'm not sure where that goes either. But
don't see how they could pull that one off at this point.
Yeah, exactly. But with a jury trial, none of that really matters. It's what the people in the box decide what's going to happen. And I agree. We, there were different points that we had hoped or had turned earlier. And honestly, I had always hoped that CBS Paramount would have come to some sort of arrangement with them. But as I continue to hear more and more about Discovery, I'm not saying they copied Axanar, but good gosh, it sure seemed like inspiration to them. And because of that, I sort of feel that there won't be any settlement at all, that they're going to just run this tooth and nail because of Discovery's premise happening, not exactly at the same time, but pretty close, definitely in a very impactful near timeline to where Axanar was going to be. So because of that, I feel they're going to run this tooth and nail. And well, I don't know whose pockets will be deeper as far as, going through this, but I'm just hoping whatever it is that the jury does make a decision quickly and this is resolved one way or the other. This has hurt both fans, fan films, and honestly the franchise in ways that I don't know that are recoverable from. So that's really sad. We've lost this wealth of fan films, and a lot of people want to necessarily blame Alec Peters and other people for, for sort of taking advantage of this intellectual property. And I have to say, Paramount and CBS have been letting people do it for, 20 plus years, that they decide all of a sudden to, to do it because of this, because of one project. I'm not sure what happened. Maybe it had something to do with all the changing of ownerships over the last few decades. But it's just sad. And no matter how it works out, I don't think anybody's going to be happy with what's occurred. So it's
I agree. I think that the right now we're looking at it was something that you brought up a while ago, and we've all kind of feared, and that is that this battle was going to end up having so much collateral damage that even if they were to win, people would wonder if it was worth it. And of course, it's so much worse if they lose, because then there is the likelihood that everyone is going to suffer the consequences for that. And how the more they dig in, the more it just feels like, okay, how much are we willing to, how far are we willing to go here? Is just now about pride, because you kind of had the biggest pieces of your defense smacked down at this point. How much longer are you going to keep going with this? Because you're not just hurting yourself anymore, like you said.
Yeah, and it's sad. And then not to jump on Alec Peters' bandwagon too much, a lot of people say, oh, well, he's spending it on this, he's spending it on that. I said, for my donations to him, I really didn't care what he spent it on, as long as I got a film as long as I got what was promised. If he needs to buy, pink tutu tights and dance on Hollywood Boulevard, I could care less. for whatever.
Will it be part of the story?
I know, but for whatever, is put forward, oh, geez, don't you care that he's spending your money on this? I said, no, as long as I get my film that I was promised, that's all. And, I felt that he was continues to make a reasonably honest effort to make what was promised to me. So I, as a, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and I don't even know where else I funded it, want what I was promised and what he needs to do to get there. It's none of my business. If he tells me he's going to give me a film that, about this time period, that's all I need. So, as much as they try to sort of rally the fans against this, the Axanar production, what's he doing? He's fighting to make the film that he promised him that he was going to make us. So how can the fans be mad at him?
Right. And at the end of the day, I mean, it's just an unfortunate turn of events for everybody. I think at this point, if Discovery winds up tanking because people choose not to go watch it because of this whole Axanar thing, then really it's going to wind up punishing a lot of other people that really aren't involved at this point.
But there are some productions that are still going on. There are new announcements of a fan film still coming out. Some are working within within the new guidelines. Other ones are sort of looking the other way and continuing to go forward. And other than Axanar, I still haven't heard any cease and desist orders. I haven't heard any don't do that. So I'm, it's obviously that they are solely singled out. I'm trying to think of the specific initials for them. I think the continuing mission.
It just continues.
Continues, yeah. Released one about 4 or 5 months after the guidelines were released that totally just didn't meet any of the guidelines requests, and nothing was said or looked twice. And they continue to go to conventions and sell copies of their DVDs and still solicit funds. And it's just you got to scratch your head and wonder where CBS and Paramount's fight is. So. Mm.
Yeah, it's becoming kind of obvious that there's not a whole lot of thought going into exactly how this is all going to end.
Oh, but before we do jump into this, John, I forgot to mention something that I got. Uh-huh. I got the Roddenberry Vault. Well, it is 3 DVDs long. It contains previously unreleased footage that was shot during the original show.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And while you say 3 DVDs, oh my gosh, calm down. it's about 18 to 20 minutes worth of new footage altogether, with a bunch of old episodes that the footage is, I guess, I don't want to say it's tacked to it in the sense that they edited it in, but it's just like, okay, well, this is some extra footage from these episodes. And so they show us the episodes and there's extra footage along with them, but not integrated in any way.
I see.
However, to get any new original Star Trek this late in the game, even a scene or two was really fun and quite enjoyable to watch, you know, for most of us diehard Trekkies who can almost, you know, recite the, you know, all the script ad verbatim after all these years, to see a freight scene done differently, or an extra scene that was never included that was on the cutting floor, or even dialogue passed between actors that was, you know, that you did not see the other side of, was still you know, a real thrill and a joy to watch. So like I said, it was only about 18 or 20 minutes, but they did, you know, throw in about a dozen old episodes as well, and they did give you the option of new special effects or old special effects, which is always nice. So
yeah,
that's so that's my other little delicious. Sorry, I should have mentioned that earlier, but if you're, since we're on the topic of Star Trek, I'd mention it because it was a lot of fun to watch. So
yeah, absolutely. All right, let's see here. We're kind of picking and choosing what we're discussing in our news feed this time, but yeah, Gary, the CW came along and shocked all of us.
Yeah, I mean, we always had a sense that some of this would happen. What John's alluding to, of course, is they've basically renewed every single DC-based show that's on the CW currently. So, you know, Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow, all renewed. And, you know, that old little show they have, Supernatural, too, they mentioned, is coming back for its 13th season.
13th. Seems appropriate.
Well, you know, it's like any TV show says, when is 13 a lucky number? When it's your next season.
That's right.
So that's good. So they renewed them all, and it's really fun. They also mentioned that whole Invasion crossover was very successful, and they got a lot of good ratings. And you know what? So I'm guessing that means we will have another crossover coming.
Yes. I'm waiting for them to announce that the next season of all four shows will be nothing but one massive crossover all season long.
Please, no. But I do hope they integrate Supergirl a little bit better. It seemed that the first one obviously sort of tacked her on to a large extent, and I'm hoping it works out a little bit better this time around. And you know, that's really good. And what is it? Let's see. We have that other DC show. Is that on?
Which other?
Is that
DC
on CW? The Damage one.
Oh, no. The you mean Powerless?
Powerless, yes.
Yeah, that's a show that's going to be on NBC.
Oh, okay. I'm getting that mixed up. But Jeff Johns, who is the big head guru now for DC, has hinted that there will be another show coming out. So we'll have to see.
That's actually a show over on Fox.
Is that the Fox
Black
one?
Lightning, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know they actually announced it. Oh.
Yeah. Well, I think it's still to be picked up if it's going to. But that's the one that they are currently chasing after.
That'll be interesting. I wonder how true they'll keep to the source material. But so that being said, but as you mentioned, iZombie, John, they haven't heard anything about that yet.
Oh, well, you know, the next season hasn't even premiered, so they're probably waiting to see how the third season does before they renew it for a fourth. So let's see here. I guess there's also some other news from the CW that you found interesting.
Oh yeah, I'm not sure how you want to refer to this, but or if you watched it, because as I actually thought about it, I realized that this show has been off the air for a long time, and a lot of people either might not remember it or just might not be that familiar with it. The show I'm talking about is Charmed. It's the story of three sisters who have magical powers, and they try to lead a regular life, even though different magical creatures, other wizards, curses, and a whole bunch of other things seem to pop into their lives, even though they're not looking for it. And of course, all the women were definitely good looking, and it had a pretty good run. It ran for about 8 years, and they're looking to bring it back in this modern age where we are focusing to try and have more female leads. They felt like that, you know, this might be a good thing to get behind. Now, how they're going to mix it, I'm not sure, but it definitely is a remake. It's not some sort of continuation of the original storylines, as far as I'm told. So I'm hoping that it comes out good. I like to think of it maybe as the chick Supernatural. I don't know. but I'm sure they do. I'm sure that was how it was pitched at some point to somebody.
I think it actually predated Supernatural, just to say how long ago it's been since they were on the air. And certainly it has a reputation for being a guilty pleasure, because certainly the leads were easy on the eyes, but there we are. Let's see here, though. Moving over to Cable real quick, just a couple of things here. First off, The Man in the High Castle has gotten a third season renewal. Which I'm a little bit surprised about. I mean, I really do enjoy the show. I think that this season has been a little bit less focused than what I prefer based on the first season. I think it is suffering a bit based on the fact that they let the or the original showrunner left. But yeah, I think that I think that Amazon is really showing a lot of faith in the show by giving it a renewal this early on.
Well, I admit I'm an infrequent watcher of it, but you know, I would think at this point, through season two, are they pretty much through all the book material?
They've diverged from the book.
Okay. Before. Yeah.
They are essentially through. They did the book more or less in the first season, and now
that's what I thought.
On their own a little bit more, but yeah, it just seems like to me maybe their decision to go showrunner by committee is muddying up the story a little bit. I'm not exactly sure where things are going right now, and we're about halfway through the second season, so I'm hoping things come together, but it is a little bit less focused, it seems, now that they are going off book, so to speak.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Oh, but I've got good news.
Go on, hit me. Hit me with
it. The show you liked is going to come back in style.
Covert of... Oh, sorry, what show was that show?
Twin Peaks.
Oh, yes!
We have, finally, a premiere date.
Now, they've been stretching that out for a while now, too.
Season three, so I guess we should call it. okay, the two-hour premiere will be on May 21st, Sunday night, May 21st. And get this, you know, there were all those rumors about how long this next season was going to be.
Yes.
18 hours.
Wow.
18 hours.
That's better than the 9 or 10 they were throwing around at one point.
Yeah, and there was the rumor that it was going to be twice as long as people had been rumored to say, but now it's official, and they are calling it, quote, the pure heroine version of David Lynch.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my.
I've got my log to hold while I'm watching, and in this modern age, you know, it used to be nice because you could get a tape recorder and play it backwards, but now I'm going to have to figure out how to do it on some audio program to figure things out.
Just a few further details for fellow fans. 2-hour premiere on that Sunday, the 21st of May. The subscribers to Showtime will have access to the third and fourth episodes, which will then air back-to-back on the network on the 28th of May, and then it will be followed by 1-hour episodes in the subsequent weeks as it spools out. But yes, we are going to be getting, I guess that amounts to 16 weeks of Twin Peaks. So almost as long as the second season was. I will say this, we've been rewatching the original Twin Peaks because now it's available on Showtime anytime. Yes.
Why didn't you tell me? Thank you.
After Christmas, the entire thing is available on Showtime. So yeah, you can go onto their on-demand service and you can find it.
Did you know during college I had a poster of Laurel Palmer up in my dorm? Of course, was the one with her. No, it was the one her dad washed up. People always look funny. Yeah. You know, grit in her hair, that type of thing.
Gotcha. Very nice.
Yeah.
We've gotten through, let's see, we're maybe close to 2/3 of the way through the second season. So we're definitely past the point where the killer was revealed. And in that kind of mid-season point in that second season where they really obviously didn't know where they were going after that. Mm-hmm. And so it has slowed down a bit. But I have noticed that, I was a bit of an apologist for the show for the longest time. But now going back and looking at it, it's like, that mid part of that second season is rough. And even David Lynch, literally just a few days ago when they announced this I think it was at the TCAs, but when they announced the premiere date, even as he was talking about it, he was saying that, they kind of were forced to move more, you know, to actually reveal the killer. They were never really planning on doing that in any timely fashion. And the network pushed for it, and they kind of never got back on track after that because they were kind of forced to do something they really weren't planning to do. So... this, however, is purely his vision. Showtime had practically no interference, especially once he threatened to walk away. I thought he actually did. for about 24 hours. this is very exciting to think that, you know what? We actually have this happening. It's not just a rumor anymore. There's a premiere date. The show is pretty much locked down. It's ready to go. I'm excited. Let's see here. What else do we have? We have a few stray things here as we kind of round up this particular episode. A little bit of casting. Ding! news. Sorry, I don't have anything that's remotely like a gong here, but yeah, Gary, if you just wanted to go.
Oh yeah, we do. There's a few little things, and as is a lot of topics lately, they are slightly comic book related. First off, just to ease everyone's mind so they can sleep at night, while you know Ben Affleck has been somewhat ambiguous about the Batman movie, he has confirmed that he will be directing it. So, John, you won't lose any more sleep at night.
Okay,
you know, you can just move on. You move on, and you'll be okay now. So he will direct it. We still don't know when. But whatever it is, he is scheduled to direct it. And in the meantime, please watch what he's putting out now. He's a little miffed that, you know, Batman hasn't even started filming, and you know he's putting out other movies, and he'd like those noticed too. It's been announced that Benedict Cumberbatch has been confirmed for Doctor Strange in the next Thor movie, Thor Ragnarok. So that's you know, sort of exciting, and is definitely going to, you know, merge things together a little bit more. That'll be interesting. They there's been talk that Mark Ruffalo will be there as Hulk. Idris Elba is coming back as Heimdall, and even Carl Urban will be joining as the villain Scourge. So yeah, a lot of people tacking on to that one. So that should be pretty interesting as well. And in going back to the TV world for a second, for casting, they've announced that Keith David will be voicing Solovar in the two-part Grodd episode. And just real quick, Grodd's the telepathic big gorilla who fights the Flash. Solovar is the leader of the, I guess I'll say, village that Grodd comes from, where all the apes can, intelligent and can talk. And now remember, this came out in the 60s, Gorilla City.
Okay.
is the name of the village, and Solovar is like sort of like the mayor leader of this whole area. So that city often plays I wouldn't say heavily, but plays a continuing role in the Flash series throughout the last 50 years, where he always seems to come back to there at some point, maybe once or twice a year in different series. So, you know, it definitely they are drawing heavily from comic books for that. And Keith David, I if you know his voice, it's that, you know, that dark, gravelly type of a voice that you pay attention and listen to as soon as he starts uttering any words. So I think that's a really great choice for the voiceover of the character. And then I'm not familiar with the actor, but his name's Peter Gadeo, I believe it is, but he's been cast as Mr. Mixelplick for Supergirl later in the season as well. So he's Mr. Mixelplick, for those who don't know, is a small little, geez, I believe imp is the correct term. Like some 4 foot tall guy who's comes from the, I think, the 12th dimension, and he, you know, has a bunch of powers that appear magical in nature. And usually he's sort of a mischief maker. So so I have a feeling we're in for quite a humorous Supergirl episode coming up. So that's all the casting news I have.
Very good. Very good. So, yeah, some interesting and fun things coming up on our DCW shows. Looking forward to it. I will say I'm not the biggest Grodd fan. I never really took to the whole, you know, superpowered gorilla thing that seemed to be a big thing in the 60s, both with Marvel and DC.
Yeah, and the effects never quite work for me on the show.
Yeah, but we'll see what the writing's like. It could supersede it. All right, we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. When we come back next time, we are going to be getting into the highlights of 2 weeks' worth of episodic discussion. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.